C1G, number 26B.
We come to the subject of truth, and truth, we always know, is a subject that has to do with consciousness, with the divine consciousness, and Mrs. Eddy takes up that subject here out of the, can be seen as a consequent necessity from what has gone before. See, we have seen that Mrs. Eddy gave first through mind, spirit, soul, a new basis for a science of being. Then has shown, I can prove that what I have been saying through my deeds, through my demonstration in principle. It is provable. It's not just a hypothesis. It's not just a nice idealistic attitude. It's something that is concrete. It's a principle, and that principle works only the good. I can prove it, and you can prove it. When she has said that, she said, and that principle tells us what? Tells us that life is at the point of isness, and therefore there is no need for embryonic life, as we have seen in life, and therefore there is no need for an evolution of material life until it could reach spiritual life. That's a wrong method. Life is. And then naturally something says within us, well, that's very nice, and that perhaps I even can reason it out logically, as you say, but I'm not aware of it. I still suffer somehow under the other concept of life, namely under the concept that life is material, that it's embryonic, that there are hereditary laws in it, and so on. How do we explain that one? And so Mrs. Eddy comes and says, yes, I explain that one to you. Namely, I explain it through the standpoint of truth, because if you ask that question that you just have been asking, it shows that you have not the consciousness of truth, but that you still are going out from your human material consciousness, because only the false consciousness can ask such a question. If you see that everything happens in consciousness and not outside, that it doesn't happen outside in the thousands and billions of years of evolution, that it is a matter of consciousness, just as Jesus proved that it is a matter of consciousness, because he could prove right away, without any time sense, the fact that life is. So you must see that actually everything happens in consciousness. Therefore, change your consciousness from a material concept to a spiritual concept, then you are no more asking that question. So the epitome here is that the true concept of creation, I could have said a true consciousness of creation, redeems. You get the redemption of truth, the healing of truth, truth that heals. And it redeems man from a wrong concept of creation, from a mortal consciousness. So all is now traced back to the point of consciousness. And so she will have to show how we should form the divine consciousness so as to redeem man from a wrong consciousness. She goes out right from the, again, from mind. Every time, you see, we have to build up a true concept. We can't do it otherwise but through the creative order of the world. So truth as mind says, a consciousness of man's true origin in mind redeems from the belief in embryology. See, the subject before was life, that life is embryonic. So now, how can we be redeemed from that belief of embryology? And says, what you have to do is to have a consciousness that the origin of man is in mind. So start out with mind, mind being your creator, that you see that you come from mind, and that mind is your parent, that that parent, mind only created ideas. So start out with mind. That mind is the better basis, and that we should contemplate mind as man's origin. Then it goes on to spirit. It is only general mortal thought which determines under what circumstances birth can take place. She brings up here a rather interesting point, you know, that she says, well, it isn't so that there is an objective state of things in regard to what brings forth birth. It always depends on the general state of thought. For instance, she said, well, how did Adam be brought forth? The method of bringing forth and giving birth was at that time that Adam came from dust. And it's interesting that practically all the old creative myths show that man came out from the ground, from dust. Then she said, then afterwards they changed the method of birth. I said, well, I can take Eve out of a rib of Adam. That was different. Then she says later on, one has a feeling that the human race stems from an fertile ovum. Is that the right expression? Fertile ovum from an egg. And that can go on and on. You can change your general concept of how birth should go on, and according to that general consciousness, that is what determines then the outward method. Just as we have perhaps in our age a change in the way of method, namely for a long time it was believed that childbirth should be painful, under a lot of pain, and now it's always taught how we can have painless birth, that is a very natural thing, we just have to change the method of it. So she said that it's a general mortal thought which determines the appearance of that of a new method. And that's interesting. I think we'll see that in another field of thought, in medicine, as we go on over the next 50 years or so, that the medicine of today may be regarded as the dumbest thing on earth, and that they will feel that that was not true medicine and that there is a higher medicine. It's just a question that first people wake up to the fact and demand a new method, and then that method will appear. Then she goes on to soul, truth of soul, showing scientifically seen, being, you see, scientifically seen is again a state of consciousness, namely a consciousness of scientific sense. Being is immortal and not subject to mortal thought. So again, she says, we must have another consciousness, namely that consciousness where we see that being is immortal and that we are not subject to mortal thought. She doesn't say subject to mortal birth, but to mortal thought. Everything starts first in consciousness. Only when we have it in consciousness, then something can materialize itself, realize itself, and demonstrate itself in externally. So she asks here that we really have spiritual sense, and that with spiritual sense we can see that God is the principle of being, and therefore from that we can easily deduce that man is immortal. If God is immortal, then man is immortal, that being is immortal, so that finally she can see that being and deity are inseparable. All right, so can you see Let's go and see the flow. Let's go back to mind again. Truth is mind. First we must have the consciousness and culture the consciousness that mind is our origin. Then we go to spirit and see that birth is spiritual, under every circumstance spiritual, and it only looks that birth is mortal because mortal thought really demands a painful birth. What do you do in your consciousness when we get to the point of soul? Then she says, now use your spiritual sense. Because in spiritual sense and spiritual seeing, being is immortal. In spiritual sense, you can see that being is immortal. It's only the mortal senses that say, I only see immortality when the body is immortal. See, that's what the senses say. The senses always ask that matter is immortal, or they don't believe in immortality. Whereas the moment we take refuge in spiritual sense, then from that standpoint, which does not take into consideration body and matter, we really can have an immortal state of things in consciousness. As principle, she says, therefore, a consciousness of man's own personal existence is a misconception of life. Can you hear the tone of principle? The counterfeit of it is personal existence. And she brings out here that going out from a misconception that all is wrong, and that from that we come to the point where we begin to see that I am somebody and ask ourselves, who has made me? And then Anera replied, God made you a person. That God is the creator of whatever is sinful or mortal, and you get a real mortal personality. So she says, therefore, a consciousness of our own personal existence is a misconception and therefore should be exchanged for a principal attitude. She goes to life and says, well, as long as you have that personal sense of yourself, then the belief of mind in matter is shown to be not only a lie, but the producer of more lies, the father of more lies, the multiplier of more lies. You have the wrong sense of multiplication with that false consciousness. Truth as truth then goes on and says, and if you have that false consciousness and produce more lies, what will happen is the more mortal mind therefore then is entertained, the more disease is manifested. The more therefore the wrong forms of error are being brought about, are being brought forth. So that we can see here that all that we entertain in mortal mind shows itself forth as forms of sin, disease, and death. And she proves that by saying, you know, she has to say somehow, you think that disease is something very objective. You get it. Without that you want it, you get it. It's not so, she says. You get it because you want it, because you are ready for it, because you entertain a mortal consciousness. And as you entertain a mortal consciousness, you are open, really, for all errors. If you are not open for mortal mind, you don't get diseased. And she said, you can see that. If you go to those species that have no mortal consciousness, or very little mortal consciousness, those species do not get sick. It is that she says that the lower animals are therefore less sickly and have less disease. So the higher mortal consciousness is built up, the more naturally we are under the influence, or we are apt to become sick. And you can see that very easily. You can see people are constantly concerned with their body and just try to keep the body in good shape and try everything that that body is strong and that is well fed and well taken care of, and constantly looking at the body and constantly measuring everything along the body. These are the people that need a doctor. Those who are not concerned about the body and leave the body alone, therefore do not really subject the body to a lot of mortal mind stuff, then the body can act healthily. The body left alone has a cybernetic law within itself that always regulates everything and brings back things to a normal state. It's only we who subject the body to a lot of fear, to a lot of anger, to a lot of irritation, to a lot of all kinds of stress and anxieties and things like that, of hate and envy and jealousy. That reflects itself on the body and the body gets sick. That's too much for the body to be self-regulating. And so he gets sick. But leaving the body alone, I think, forget everything, do not think about the body, and the body is quite okay. Just as it is with the lower animals. Then, finally she comes to the point of truth as love, where she says, but such an error is not God created, and therefore has no entity. Can you hear the tone of love? Is not God created. See, in that little term, is not. Love is always either all or nothing. Always when you bring out the sense of love, it is either everything, all-embraced, universal, or nothing at all. So, for such an error, the counterfeit of truth, we are in truth as love, is not God created, and therefore has no identity. So sometimes, you see, you can bring out the tone of a synonymous term without really using only the terms you have on your list of ideas. But the tonality can be brought out in many, many ways. Love is always either all or nothing. Here you have it again. Yes. So, it shows here that error is not of God. Therefore, God's consciousness of himself has no consciousness of error. And that would be the solution, how to get rid of a wrong concept. That is the sixth subject. And then we come to the seventh subject that is rather short, but very concise, right to the point, and you find here really the climax of that third part, namely, what is being, how do we realize being, how can we have the being that is, so that we really participate in life as mind, life that is eternal, and the subject of love summarizes that from a very high altitude. We have epitomized this as saying God and man are coexistent. Can you see a coexistent? Existence has to do with life, of isness. Now, here we have the convergence of our life with the life that is God to be the same life. It coexists so that there is just life. Actually, that point which we would like to attain. Yes. So, what does she say first, love as mind? What would we say with love as mind, when we would go out from the highest fact of being? The subject is being, the subject is life. And so we would perhaps say, well, man's origin is in life. He comes from life. Life is his origin. Life is his parent. Life is his father. Life is his mother. That is the origin of man. So life is to hear the origin of man. You see, not mind. We are now coming up to the main tone of the whole third part, which is life, and so we can see life is the origin of man. Then she goes right on to spirit and shows that creation is therefore a radiation of spirit, before which all belief in intelligent matter will pass away. Can you see the tone of love as spirit? All belief will pass away. You see, the point of annihilation, the point of complete exclusion of error, is always love. And here we get that complete sense of love. How? When we see really that creation is the radiation of spirit, the infinite influx and light and effulgence of spirit, the rhythm of spirit, the calculus of spirit, where actually in that radiation of spirit, each idea reflects every other idea, each idea radiates its own nature, every other idea reflects the radiation of all other ideas. There is no more room in that infinite reflection for any error to have any place. So it passes away. Love as soul. When life is understood spiritually, can you see now, spiritual understanding, soul? So when life is understood spiritually, mortal belief goes out at last forever. Can you see, every time it is going out at last forever, it's no more there. All belief go out. Can you hear the tone of love? See, this complete exclusion, this statement that it's absolutely impossible, this is always love. If absolutely error is impossible, if error is absolutely excluded, if it's absolutely unknown, and so on, this is always a tone of love, because love says, I'm all-inclusive and there is no room for anything else. So here in soul, she also said, well, if life, being, that's the main subject here, life, is spiritually understood, so then mortal belief goes out at last forever. Tone of love, of complete exclusion. Therefore, love as principle says we should really know the science of life, which is called ontology. So ontology, not physiology, solves the problem of being. Now you have the science of life as solving the problem. Can you hear the tone of principle again? Principle solves the problem. And it says, but that must be a science of life, of ontology, and not the science of physical life, like physiology. Therefore, physiology again should be excluded, because only ontology can prove life eternal. This leads at once to love as life. It's perhaps a difficult passage in the text. I put it that education should not be misdirected, that we should really go along the way of life and culture that way of life in education and not go into other ways of education. She brings in that example that a father that had a baby, put that baby on the water until the baby could stay a long time on the water. I don't know how long, she says, about 20 minutes. So, well, she says, that's educating men into a wrong line, namely into a fish line. They can stay on the water that way, and not really into a spiritual education. love as truth then comes and says the consciousness of man's coexistence. You have again the great tone of life, coexistence, but it's coexistence, which is love, with his creator removes suffering and sorrow. Again, removes, you know, excludes it. It's impossible there. Can you feel the all-embraced sense of love that is given to show that being is all the being there is? Can you see what I say? Being is all the being there is. That's the tone of love about being. All the being there is. Huh? That's love. And shows it from the subtone of truth that therefore there can be no suffering, no disease, no sorrow in that being. And love as love, therefore then would show, that's very nice there, in science, man never fell. So he has not to be brought back to God through the condemnation of mortals to till the ground, to come out of mortality into immortality and build it up and finally get back to where he has fallen away. The solution is to see that man never did fall away and never lost its perfect state of being. So that would be the solution. And that's the end of the chapter. To the point. Okay? Thank you. That was it.